Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our Three Ideas in 30 Minutes, a Wednesday night edition of our Shear. I want to thank our very generous sponsors tonight, sponsored by Lester and Judy Henner in memory of their mothers, Minna Henner, Michaela Bas Naftali, and Peggy Wohl, Perel Rachel Bas Yehuda Ruven, who share the same yurt site on the 17th of Teves. It should be an aliyah for their neshamas. Thank you to the Henners very much for sponsoring. And of course, thank you to Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak, who are sponsoring in gratitude of the many weekly learning opportunities in BRS. We are grateful for their friendship and their sponsorship. It was amazing. Marilyn came running up to me at the end of Shul on Shabbos because last week I teased that I wasn't going to say which one was my favorite idea, and she wanted to guess which one was the idea. So I'll let her guess again this week. And of course, our learning is, as always, an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tehila Bas Gavriel Pinchas. Our hot dog this week has to go. It was a tie. It was a close one, Jason. It's the Jasons, the two Jasons who both decided to use the onion rings to surround the hot dogs. I think that's pretty good. You should take a picture of that. That's photo worthy. And we'll post it. We'll post it in the chat. But Jason's angry, Jason Asher, the two of you. I don't know if you'll learn anything tonight, but you win the hot dog award for this evening. And again, I want to welcome everybody, those who are here, because it's a Wednesday night, unable to come on Thursday nights. We appreciate it. I think this was the first week we had to bring out more hot dogs before the shiur even began. People were showing up, lining up early, Baruch Hashem. Okay. But we also learned a little Torah in the shiur. So the pasuk, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu. We're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu in our parsha this week. And Moshe Rabbeinu, like Yirmiyahu, who's going to follow him, is a reluctant leader. Hashem comes to him and says, Moshe, you're going to go down to Egypt. You're going to tell the people that I'm going to redeem them. Vayan Moshe vayomer vehein lo yaminu li. Moshe Rabbeinu says, but they're not going to believe me. You have to put yourself in the Jewish people's shoes, by the way. We sometimes forget. They were enslaved for 200 years. That's a very long time. It's basically the length of how long America's been in existence. A very long time. So they were completely entrenched in an enslaved mindset. And the thought that all of a sudden someone was going to come and say that there's a God and he's going to redeem you was a completely inexplicable idea. So of course they weren't going to believe him. So what does Hashem say back to him? Vayomer elav Hashem, ma ze biyadecha. Hashem says, what's that in your hand? Vayomer mateh. Moshe Rabbeinu says it's a staff. And of course we know that he throws the staff on the ground and it turns into a snake, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu, that's his bag of tricks that he's going to use when he goes down to Egypt to convince the Jewish people that that Hashem is going to redeem them. Asks the Kashuk Lever Rebbe, Bar Yitzvi Frimer, in his Sefer Eretzvi. Two questions. Number one, if you look at the word mazeh, the word mazeh is one word or two words if I were asking you to write it out? Two words, mazeh, memhei, zayin hei, mazeh, what is this? Two words. If you look in the pasuk right here, though, it is written as one word, mazeh, mem, zayin, hey. So ask the Kashuk Lever, I don't understand. Why is this word mazeh written differently than any other place that we would write it? Why is it written as one word as opposed to two words? That's question number one. Question number two is, what is the significance of turning a staff into a snake and a snake back to a staff? Is this just Hashem as a bag of tricks? Hashem is a magician, and he, you know, this year we always have a magician on Simchas Torah. Was anyone here this year on Simchas Torah? Anyone see the magician? Now you're looking at him because the magician didn't show up. So we had like 200 kids who were waiting for a magician. You can't disappoint the kids. So I only have one. I only have one trick up my sleeve. Anyone see what I did? Oh, you didn't see? So I juggle. There's only one problem. I'm sitting outside in the sukkah. There's nothing to juggle. So the kids were eating fruit by the foot. So I stole from the kids 3 foot by the fruit by the foot, and I start juggling fruit by the foot. And I'm like, how long can I entertain kids juggling fruit by the foot? So I was the magician for the day. Is that what Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, see, now that's all you guys are going to think about, hot dogs and fruit by the foot for the rest of the year. But is that what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing here? Hashem says, we got to convince them. We got to entertain the Jewish people, make them believe. So what are we going to do? So Moskowitz juggled fruit by the foot. Moshe Rabbeinu, he had a trick up his sleeve that he was able to turn a staff into a snake and a snake into a staff. What is the significance? Why Dafka a snake? Turn the staff into a crocodile. Turn the staff into, you know, the staff into a fruit by the foot. What's the significance of a snake? Says the Kashuk Lever, something so beautiful. He writes here that what Moshe Rabbeinu was really asking when he said, Vehim lo yaminu li, that they're not going to believe me. What he was really asking is, Meheichan yechola litzmoch Yeshua liYisrael, kevan shemeshukam be'avodah zarah. How are the Jewish people ever going to be redeemed if they are completely unworthy? For 200 years, Chazal tells, they were in the Memtesh Shari Tumah, they were at the 49th level of impurity. That is how bad they were. They were completely immersed and soaked in Egyptian society of idolatry and promiscuity and licentious behavior and immorality. And all of a sudden, they're going to be worthy of redemption from God? So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was really asking. How is it that this people who are so immersed in an immoral society are suddenly going to be worthy of redemption? So Moshe Rabbeinu, what does he do? He takes a staff and he turns into a snake. Where do we see the snake for the first time in Tanakh? Adam and Chava. And what does the snake do? What is he synonymous with? Sin, evil. He introduces sin into the world. And yet what happens to that snake now? He takes a staff, turns it into a snake, and then he turns it back into a staff. Essentially showing what? That even the snake, even the animal that is so synonymous with sin, that introduced sin into the world, what is he capable of? He's capable of changing. That you could turn the staff into the snake and the snake back into the staff to show that even if you are the snake, even if you are the animal that introduced sin into the world, it doesn't get worse than that. Even you are capable of changing. And so it wasn't just a random, Hashem picked an animal out of a hat and said, you know what, let's go with the snake. No, there's a great symbolism to the snake because the snake is symbolic of sin. And Hashem is showing Moshe Rabbeinu to teach the Jewish people that even though you are immersed in sin, you are capable of changing. Says the Kashuk Lover, Ve'ezeh heshiv Hashem Yisbarach beremez shel haficha mateh lenachash ve'nachash lemateh. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching by changing the staff into a snake and the snake into a snap. Shemei omek hashiflus tucha litzmoach Yeshua. That even if you're feeling beaten down, and even if you're feeling lowly, and even if you're feeling unworthy, you're able to bring the redemption. Kamo nachash, who rashis hashiflus betuma, the snake introduced impurity into the world. And yet, all of a sudden, now, it is able to change. Now we understand the snake. And now we understand the staff, that there's a great symbolism to it, that it's recognizing our ability to change. That even if we feel like the Jewish people in the time of Mitzrayim, don't count yourself out, because there's always hope for you. If the snake can change, so can you. So what about this word mazeh? Hashem responds and says, mazeh biyadecha. What is this in your hand? And we said, usually the word mazeh is two words, ma and zeh. Here it's used as one word, mazeh. Ask the Kashuk Lover, why in the world would the Torah write it that way? He says, because the word mazeh is not just referring to what is this, but the word mazeh is a reference to another period of the Torah, and that is the Parah Adumah. What do we do with the Parah Adumah? We sprinkle the water of the Parah Adumah over people who are tamei. People who aren't just tamei of like an innocuous form of tumah, but the worst kind of tumah there is, the worst kind of impurity there is, which is tumas mesa, tamei, a person who's impure comes in contact with a dead body. Comes along Hashem and says, mazeh biyadecha, symbolizing the mechatas, Shemitame tahorim and metayer tameim. What does the Parah Adumah do? It purifies those who are impure and makes those who are pure impure. The person who sprinkles it becomes impure, but the person who was previously impure suddenly becomes pure. Umerames, and this is showing us, Shemishu tame be'ene atzmo, that even someone who is impure in their own eyes, someone who does not think that they are worthy, metayer, they are able to purify themselves. And so says the Kashuk Lover, what is happening here is not just a conversation about magic tricks. It's not just Moshe Rabbeinu says, they're not going to believe me. You know, Moskowitz isn't here right now to juggle the fruit by the foot. So I'll send Moshe, and Moshe, you'll do this magic trip of turn a staff into a snake and a snake into a staff. No. There's a much deeper conversation going on here. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to know, how am I going to convince the Jewish people who feel so unworthy that they are nonetheless worthy of Hashem's redemption? And comes along Hashem and says, you're going to do it in two ways. First, you're going to take a staff and you're going to turn it into a snake. You're going to take the staff, which is the symbol of the snake, which is the symbol of impurity. And you're going to show them that even that can change. And if even a snake can change into a staff, then you, no matter how lowly you feel, and no matter how many mistakes you've made, and no matter how many times you've come short, if the snake can change, so can you. And that's the message that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to deliver to the Jewish people. And second of all, Hashem says, Mazeh. The word Mazeh is not just saying, what is this? Hashem, of course, knew what was in Moshe Rabbeinu's hands. But the Mazeh is referencing another time in the Torah of the Parah Aduma. And what we do with the Parah Aduma is we sprinkle it on someone, and we're able to take someone who is the worst form of impurity and to make them pure. Hashem says, that's what I'm going to do to you, the Jewish people. Never count yourself out. Don't ever think you are unworthy. Because if someone who is impure can become pure, then so too you, the Jewish people, are going to be worthy of redemption. Yeah. To me, this is an idea that is so powerful about all of us, to think about ourselves, that there are times when we might think we're unworthy, or we might think because we've done something wrong, or because we've sinned, or because we've made mistakes, or because of our shortcomings, A, I can never change, and B, even if I can, I'm never going to be worthy of Hashem's love, of other people's love, of being able to fix my mistakes. Kazer Glovern says that that same lesson to the Jewish people back then is the lesson for us nowadays. I think it's a very powerful message. That's idea number one from the Kazer Glover Rebbe. Idea number two comes from the Degel Machane Ephraim. Now, I can impress you and read an inside in the Degel Machane Ephraim, and I will in a little bit, but I don't want to lose you. So instead, I'm going to read it in what Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson does with the Degel Machane Ephraim. So I have it for you on pages 2 and 3 in the Hebrew, which we'll see a little bit later on, and I want you to be able to have the primary source so you can learn it inside if you want. But I want to show you what Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson does with this, because when I say this is unbelievable, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay? So psychologically profound, it spoke to me, and I hope it speaks to you as well. Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the burning bush. We all know the famous story, Vayira Malach Hashem Eila Bela Basesh Mitoch Hasneh. There's a fire in the thorny bush. Moshe Rabbeinu looks at it, and he says, I have to turn away. He says, Madua lo yivar asneh. What is going on here? Usually, if you go outside and you light a bush on fire, don't try this at home, so the bush is going to get consumed. Moshe Rabbeinu is looking at this, and he says, I don't understand. Why isn't this thorny bush being consumed? Vayar Hashem kisar leros, and Hashem sees his confusion. And he sees that he's turning away. Vayikra elav Elokim mitoch asneh. Hashem calls to him. And he says, Al tikra, don't come close. Shal na lecha me'araglecha ki amakom asher ata omed alav ad mas kodesh. Take off your shoes, because where you're standing is a very holy place. Vayomer anochi elokei avicha, elokei Avram, elokei Yitzchak, elokei Yaakov. And he says that I am the God. And Hashem's going to introduce himself to Moshe Rabbeinu there. Okay, that is the famous story of the burning bush, Moshe Rabbeinu's confusion, and Hashem's response. Says Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, and it's explicit in the Degel Machane Ephraim, the words are a little bit more difficult, so I don't want to lose you in it. But go to page number 4 for a second. And Rabbi Y.Y. essentially asks, what is this imagery of the thorns? Of the thorny bush, but there's a fire, but the fire's not consuming the thorny bush, and that's what's confusing Moshe Rabbeinu. The Degel Machane Ephraim explains that the thorns are very symbolic here. That the thorns represent everything negative inside of you. However you want to interpret that, whether it is a certain toxicity you have, whether it's a certain anxiety you have, whether there are fears that you have, whether there are traumas that you have, whether there are demons that you have, every one of us, which I won't take a poll, but every one of us has those things somewhere inside of us. They could be negative self-taught. They could be anxieties that you have, fears that you have, past traumas that you have. We all have stuff that we have inside of us. Now, to divorce that stuff from Judaism and from your religious experience is impossible because they're part of who we are. It's part of what makes us who we are. And so we like to believe that I'm going to come to Shmon Esrei, I'm going to come to my relationship with Hashem, and I'm going to be on fire. And if my Shmon Esrei is good enough, and if my learning is good enough, and if my Emunah is good enough, if everything is good enough, if that fire is burning, then all of my thorns are going to disappear. Then all of my fears, and all of my anxieties, and all of my demons, and all of my traumas, and all all of it's going to disappear. You know why? Because the fire of my Judaism, because my davening and my learning and my emuna is going to make everything else disappear. But comes along the story of the snan, shows us, Moshe Rabbeinu looks at it and he says, wait a second, the bush is still there. I'm doing everything right. I'm showing up to minyan 3 times a day. I'm learning. I'm working on my emuna, my bitachon. I'm treating people respectfully. Hashem, I'm checking all the boxes. But you know what? I still feel anxious sometimes. And the traumas of my past are still there. And I still fear the fears. And I still have those demons that haven't been exorcised. What's going on here? I have the fire. I'm doing everything right. But it's not overtaking and making everything else disappear. That, says the Degemach and Ephraim, is the conversation that Moshe is having here. And it's a conversation that so many of us have. I had a conversation with a guy maybe a year and a half ago. The guy literally, he was going through a very difficult spell at work. And he said to me, he says, you know, I don't understand. He says, I've been learning about Amuna recently. And I don't understand why, therefore, I'm not more successful at work. It was, for him, there was like it was a correlation. If I learn about Amuna, then it's going to make everything else better. And when we started unpacking it, I realized that he thought that if he just checks the boxes, learns, comes to davening, whatever, then it'll solve all of his problems. Now, if you have blind spots, or if you haven't worked through certain things that have been holding you back your whole life, learning a book about Amuna is not going to solve all those problems. It might open doors. It might give you pathways. It might show you things that you previously were blind to, but it's not going to solve all your problems. He thought it was like a fix-it-all. That, says Rabbi YY, is exactly what's happening here. I want to read it for you here. Turn to page 4. Moshe was asking, this is on the bottom, page 4, at the bottom. One of the great challenges of any sincere person striving to grow spiritually is that even when he or she manages to ignite a fire in their soul, the fire never consumes the thorns present in the psyche. So you could be on fire, you could be at Shalosh Shudos and singing, and you could be... But it's not going to solve all the problems. It's not going to rid you of your thorns. The passion is aglow, the heart is aflame, the ecstasy is ablaze, but the thorns refuse to sublimate it in the flame. Toxicity and anxiety take over. A person may be in the midst of sincere prayer to Hashem, but suddenly a most ugly thought or craving will flare up in your brain. I'm sure that never happens to any of you. It happens to me all the time. Right? You're sitting there davening, and a thought creeps into your brain. You're like, why are you there? I'm trying my best. But those thorns are still there. You may be experiencing the most happy moment in your life, but suddenly the most obnoxious emotion surfaces in your heart. Even in our most potent fires, the thorns abound. Even in our most intimate, subtle, refined, joyous spiritual experiences, we confront irrational fears, demons, and traumas. They often surface to the conscious in the most least expected moments. The story of the burning bush, which would not consume the thorns, embodies the duality of every heart. On the one hand, we experience a desire to be good and moral. But then at other times, we are mundane and careless, overtaken by beastly tendencies, selfish impulses, and ugly emotions. What is worse, these polarities are often experienced in such close proximity with each other. In the morning, I may be infused with a sense of awe, wonder, splendor, and amazement. At other times, and then I feel inspired, right? But at that same day, barely a few hours later, sometimes minutes, pass, and boom, the sublime ecstasy withers away. This spiritual person suddenly has a hard time refusing a slice of pizza, a particular website, or a terrible, angry impulse. And so those two emotions can coexist. You can both have your fire, but also have the thorns there. You could feel connected one minute, and the next minute, want that piece of pizza, want to go on a website you know you shouldn't, or get angry even though you know it's a bad thing. And you might say to yourself, how could that be? I'm on fire in Judaism. I just davened. I just learned. I went to the Emunah Shir this morning. It's supposed to rid me of all my thorns. But that's the imagery, says the Degemach and Ephraim, that appears in our Parsha. That the fire is there, but you know what else is there? The thorns are there as well. And now you understand. Now you understand Moshe's question, and you understand Hashem's answer. Because what does Hashem answer? Hashem says, the place upon which you are standing, Hamakom asher ata omed alav admas kodeshu. Hashem says, you don't have to move. What is he really saying? Hashem responds, these words, right, remove your shoes from your feet because the place upon which you stand is sacred soil. These words revolutionize our approach to the enduring struggle. Holiness lies in the very place upon which you stand. Don't wait until you reach your own psychological utopia. In other words, don't wait for perfection. Don't wait for everything to be tied nicely in a bow. Don't wait for you to solve everything. Rather, the very place where you stand is holy. A relationship with Hashem does not mean that you are darkness free, thorn free, or struggle free. You must encounter the holiness in your present situation. And so you don't have to wait for everything to be perfect. You don't have to wait for your life to be darkness free, or thorn free, or struggle free, or anxiety free, or fear free, or demons free, or trauma free. But rather, you know what you do? You find Hashem through those experiences. You don't rid yourself of them, but you channel them into an expression of your relationship with Hashem. I wrote about this in the weekly 2 weeks ago, for those who read what I write in the weekly. But I wrote about this new genre of young musicians and artists, Jewish musicians and artists, who I think it's amazing, stirred a little bit of a public debate about whether it's a good thing. I think it's a beautiful thing. About young musicians that are writing about real struggle in their relationship with Hashem, real struggle in Amunah, real struggle in brokenness, real struggle in how to connect. And they're putting that into music in a language that I don't think has existed, certainly in music in my lifetime. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And that's exactly what Rabbi YY is saying in the words of the Degel Machaneh Ephraim. Don't wait until you solve all your problems, because you're never gonna. The thorns are always gonna be there. There are always gonna be darkness. There's always gonna be struggle. But Ki Amakom, that place, that's where you're going to find Hashem. That's where you're going to create your relationship with Hashem. So if I had to summarize this magnificent idea, and you really have to, this is one of those you have to digest a little bit. You have to digest how deep of an idea it really is. But if I had to summarize it, it is that the thorns are always going to be there. Moshe Rabbeinu thought the thorns would disappear. He thought the thorns, which are symbolic of everything difficult and struggling and the anxieties and the fears. Moshe thought that if I just am on fire, everything else is going to disappear. And Hashem comes along and says, it doesn't work that way. Those thorns follow you through life. It's hard to get rid of them. But part of the challenge of Judaism is to learn to have them coexist, to have the fire and the thorns, and to find Hashem through the combination of the two of them. I think that is a magnificent idea from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. Idea number three, page number seven. This is a little bit different. Page number six, sorry. This is a little bit different. I'm going to try something new here. You'll tell me if you like it or not. This is a Shailas Hatshuvos of the Shvus Yaakov, a question or responsa of the Shvus Yaakov. And he asked the following question. Page number six, right, you see my underline. He says, I don't understand this new minhag of people that come into shul with a walking stick. Now, Hami's not here right now. Those who know Hami, we love Hami. You should have arichas, yom, and visham. Hami walks around with a walking stick. So already before Hami, there were people that walked into shul with a walking stick. He says, I don't understand how they do that. Sheyesh chashash iser leilech im hamakel shama. Because there could be a halachic problem with walking to shul with a walking stick. Why? Because the Gemara in Bracho says, lo yikanes adam lahara bais bimaklo uviminalo. They are not allowed to go to the Temple Mount. You weren't allowed to go to the Beis HaMikdash with your shoes and with your staff. So the Shailas Hatshuvos Shvus Yaakov is asked the question, how is it that people go into shul with a walking stick? You can't show up at the Beis HaMikdash with a walking stick. Why can you show up here? That was the question that he was asked. Of course, what's he going to answer from? Where in our parsha? Where am I going with this? Where does Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu has a walking stick. Right? So if you look in his answer, he says, wait a second. There are two types of walking sticks. There's a walking stick that you use for pleasure. That is what he says. There's like a walking stick. You know, I went hiking with my son this summer. So, they rent in the airport these like walking poles, which I was mocking until you get up to the top of the mountain. And you have to go down and you realize that, thank God I have those walking sticks to plant into the ground before I go flying. Right? Okay, so... Right, those are the bad types of walking sticks because they're dirty and they collect all the schmutz on the floor. He says, "Masha'ein kein, b'makel shu l'kavod zakein v'chashuvim." But there is a nicer type of walking stick, the type that Hamu uses, which is not getting dirty, but it's a sign of regality. It's a sign of dignity that people walk around in a certain way. He says, "Ein bizoi zeh klal," and there's nothing wrong with that type of walking stick. How do I know that? How do I know that there are walking sticks that are good? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the burning bush, Hashem tells him to take off what?
Shoes.
Take off your shoes. But Moshe Rabbeinu is on a holy place. What should he also have to have taken away? His walking stick. Says the Shos Yaakov, because Moshe doesn't have to remove his walking stick, you see that it's okay to have the walking stick even in Shul. That is the Shos Yaakov. Now you're thinking to yourself, Moskowitz, what in the world are you talking about? Why are we talking about walking sticks in Shul? Right? I mean, I know I have gray in my beard. I have a few years, Bezras Hashem, before I need to use a walking stick in Shul. So what are we talking about here? I'll tell you what I'm talking about here. I saw this idea quoted from Rabbi Reisman. Quoted this Shos Yaakov. And he built an entirely different understanding of it. He says what this is really driving at is an understanding that the way we conduct ourselves in Shul has to have a certain sense of dignity. That Shul is not your living room. Shul is not your cafe. Shul is not your Starbucks. Shul is not your 7-Eleven, even though we're all sitting here eating hot dogs. Right? Shul is a holy, sacred place. And we have to remember to treat it that way. It's actually one of the challenges here at BRS. Because every room in our building is a multi-purpose room, all joking aside, right? The room that you just had a bar mitzvah in is the room you're going to daven mincha in. And there's slushies in the lobby. And it's also the playground. Right? Every room is used for so many purposes. Like you have to kind of alter your mind. Okay, no, now I'm here for davening. But then I'm going to be there for an event with, a public speaker. And then I'm going to be there for a dinner. And then I'm going to be there for a bar mitzvah. And then I'm going to be there for a bat mitzvah. And then I'm, right? So because it's a multi-purpose room, you kind of have to remind yourself every now and then, no, this is a really holy place. This is a sanctified place. And we have to treat it that way. We have to treat it that way. And here's where I'm going with that. Going to get a little controversial here. A few months ago, Thanksgiving time, for those of you who follow the news, so the U.S. Transportation Secretary made an announcement. Though everyone knows that flying isn't what it used to be, and you just have to go on the news any day now to know that every day there's a story about someone who got thrown off an airplane or got thrown out of the airport because they mistreated a stewardess or because they got in a fight or they, right. So he said, U.S. Transportation, he said, I got the solution to that. He put out a civility statement, and part of the civility statement is, anyone remember? You got to dress properly. He says, are you dressing with respect? And his whole thing was, we can solve all the problems if you just dress with respect. He got killed for it. Everyone on social media said, what are you talking about? That people, if they start dressing properly, others are going to treat each other better? And he went on the news, and I have all these articles for you. He went on the news and he said, yes. He says, because the way you dress testifies to the way you're going to behave. If you show up at an airport, I was just in an airport yesterday, I was thinking about this. If you show up at an airport in your pajamas, so you're going to treat the airport like a garbage can. But if you show up and you dress in a refined, dignified fashion, so you're going to treat the flying experience in a different way. He says, as this is an article for the New York Times, you don't have that. As travelers head to the airport this holiday season, the U.S. government wants them to rethink their travel checklist, their behavior, and also their outfits. Because he understood that the way you dressed, are you dressing with respect, Mr. Duffy said. Are you, right, bringing civility back, I think, enhances the travel experience for everybody. Let's go back to an era where we didn't wear our pajamas to the airport. And he talks about how it used to be people wore top hats and jackets, and they used to dress in a dignified fashion. Now, is he right or wrong? The answer is, I think he's 100% right. And I think it's exactly what the Shos Yaakov is telling us, that the way we dress, in the way we behave, in the way we conduct ourselves, signifies a certain sense of dignity and respect. And so if I walk into Shul, and I'm in my pajamas and flip-flops or whatever you want to, again, I'm not judging anybody, but you can use whatever analogy you want. So that's your relationship with Shul. If you understand that Shul is a sacred, holy place, and therefore you're going to show up in a respectful fashion. Now, for everyone, that's going to be different. So if at home, you sit there with your, in your underwear and your shirt off, and therefore you come to Shul in a nice polo shirt, okay, fine, beautiful, I don't judge. But if everyone has to make that decision for themselves, how am I going to remind myself that this is not just Stama place, but this is a base Knesset? And that's what the Shos Yaakov is saying. The Shos Yaakov is saying when Moshe Rabbeinu came to the Sneh, and Hashem says, take off your shoes, but you can keep your staff. And we asked, how can he keep his staff? Isn't that disrespectful? Doesn't the Gemara say you can't show up at Har HaBayis with a staff? He says, no, that's a staff that Moskowitz was using in Wyoming when he was digging into the ground and getting it all muddy. But a refined, dignified way of conducting yourself, that's exactly what you should be doing in shul. And so what I think the Shvus Yaakov, based on this insight of Rabbi Reisman, is reminding us that we have to think about how we want to treat the shul. We have to think about how we want to relate to the shul and how we want our children to relate to shul as well. And that starts with the way we dress, with the way we walk in, and the way we behave ourselves. It's not me saying it. It's the U.S. Transportation Secretary saying it. That if he thinks dressing better is going to dictate how we conduct ourselves when we go on an airplane, then kal vachomer. The way we show up in shul and the way we dress to shul should reflect our sense of reverence and our sense of love for the shul itself. So we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one came from the Kazhuk Love, a reminder that all of us can change. That if the nachas can change, then we can change. And that's signified by the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma, reminding us that all of us have the capability to change. Idea number two came from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, that all of us have thorns in our lives. They're the stresses and the anxieties and the traumas and the fears and the demons. And they're not going to disappear no matter how much you're on fire. They're not going to disappear. Rather, we have to learn to live with them. Ki amakom asher, that place that you're standing in those fears and in those anxieties and in those demons is where you're going to create the most authentic, deep, and real relationship with Hashem. Idea number three came from the Shvus Yaakov. Based on this idea, how did Moshe Rabbeinu come with a stick? Didn't we know that you can't go to Har HaBayis with a staff? He says, no, this was a dignified staff. And with a dignified staff, that's specifically how you should show up. It's a reminder that the way we behave and the way we dress and the way we conduct ourselves is really showing our sense of reverence for the place we are. Moshe Rabbeinu had a staff of dignity. And so too, when we come into the shul, we have to come in a dignified fashion, dressing the part, ready to show that we understand the holiness of this place. I wish everyone a good Shabbat.